Hello, and it's another episode of Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from our team at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler, and with me, my colleagues Juliette Gash and Fiacra O'Kioni. And Juliette, we'll start with the issue that's been uppermost in most TDs' minds this week, and this is the now paused review into the allocation of special needs assistance in schools. And many schools suddenly finding out that they were losing or gaining SNAs during last week. The uproar as a result of all of that caused a sudden announcement from Education Minister Hildegard Nocton earlier this week about a pause, which again was news to the schools that thought had been told they were getting extra SNAs allocated to them. And once again, it came up at leaders' questions this Thursday, Juliette. And I suppose the question that was coming up again and again, what does this pause mean?
So we know that around 200 schools in this batch of around 580-90 schools who were in this review were told that they were going to see a reduction in their number of SNAs. Now, we know also, as you mentioned, that the review has been paused and that this won't now, as we expect, proceed in September because there's going to be further engagement. So Owen Kenny from Labour was repeatedly putting this to the Thánaiste during leaders' questions, saying, so what is the plan? Ivana Bacic had that pithy line, a pause is not a plan. I don't think we're still quite clear what the plan is. We do know that there is no reduction in headcount of SNAs. The number has been steadily climbing. Since 2020, it's gone up by around 50% and it's due to be around 25,000 by the end of next school year. But that doesn't really allay the fears of schools, of parents and of SNAs themselves.
And we heard the Thánaiste Simon Harris talking about a workforce plan. But within that, parents have, and schools have legitimate questions about, are there children currently with SNAs who under this workforce plan will be defined out of needing an SNA in order that that SNA can go and work somewhere else, because there's a promise, of course, to increase the number of special classes.
Indeed. So there is the difficulty in that, of course, it makes sense to review these things and to have a sense of where people are and if they're needed where they are. But this review was delayed by COVID and now it seems it's being rushed a little, perhaps. And the Holly Cairns was making the point that a lot of the review is focused on the physical needs of children. So they will look at what a child physically needs from their SNA. The difficulty is that most SNAs provide far more than what they're required to do. And so we've heard parents saying that if my school loses half or more of their SNAs, there's no way my child will be able to continue going to school. And these are children who are not moving on next year, whose needs are not changing or lightening, who will need that number of SNAs. And so it's led to this understandable concern.
I think in terms of the actual plan itself, I think you're right in saying that, look, there is a lot of confusion about what it actually means for the people who are most important of all this vulnerable kids and obviously families in that situation. But I think in terms of the political side of it, what is the plan for government? The plan is to reverse as quickly as you can, to go back to the start of the week and to get the messaging right this time. The Taoiseach Micheál Martin has been at pains a number of times this week to point out that, look, the overall SNA numbers are going up. And he is right, they are going up somewhere in the region of 25,000 is the plan, I think, by the end of this year or next year. But that's clearly not landing with opposition parties. They're clearly sensing blood on this and saying that, look, a government problem in messaging has led to confusion for affected families. And look, whatever about what that means in the real world in terms of politics, that means an open goal for the opposition.
Yeah, and it's not just the messaging. It's also what are the new criteria that will apply and will there be categories of children who currently get help that will be left outside of that? And if you're going to meet the commitment to extra classes, where will the extra SNAs come from? And of course, this, Fiacra, comes in a week when the government has been warned by the Fiscal Advisory Council that we have, a total of half of our corporation tax nearly comes from three multinationals, which is obviously a huge systemic risk. And we're not saving most of that money. We're putting a fraction of it away. We're spending most of it on day-to-day spending.
And this is something that the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, IFAC, not for the first time, have raised these concerns. Seamus Coffey, of course, was on Morning Ireland this morning. He was asked by our colleagues in Morning Ireland saying, well, you know, has government listened to you or expecting them to listen to you? And he said, well, we're expecting them to listen as much as they always do, which which is not very much on this. Now, government for its part, the Taoiseach and now Minister for Finance, Simon Harris, he has on Thursday said that, look, government is absolutely committed to a balanced and appropriate budget approach and has set aside some €24 billion for the Ireland Future Fund. But for, again, for the opposition, they're saying, look, this doesn't cut it. In particular, Jed Nash of Labour has said that he wants to see a proper balanced approach to budgets. In other words, listening to people like IFAC immediately. And he has said a rather appropriate point that Ireland's economy will be at significant risk if there is just even one single misstep at board level at some of these US multinationals.
Yes, and we learned, of course, during the banking crash, didn't we, that what happens when a government is so reliant, and back then it was property taxes, when it's so reliant on those property taxes and suddenly they dry up and suddenly your services can't operate and you're back into the austerity, which most people want to very much put in the past.
And I guess it's kind of, it is exactly that, that it is the corporation tax issue has been, you know, a golden egg for Ireland and, you know, somewhat questionable golden egg for a generation. It is something that government is aware it's going to have to wean Ireland off a bit. But how you do that and how quickly you do that is the question, I think, in everybody's minds.
Another question where how you do that and when you do that arises is over an age limit or an age ban for under 16s using social media. Now, Simon Harris seemed very committed to the idea. Patrick O'Donovan seemed very committed to the idea. But when the Taoiseach brought the government's new digital plan to Cabinet this week, turned out that wasn't quite the idea.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to two particular words on this. So some people, perhaps some of the people you mentioned there in government, will talk about a ban. And other people will talk about restrictions. And that's a nice way of saying that there's certainly a disagreement, certainly, again, mixed messaging coming from government on this. There was maybe a perspective that the past couple of weeks and certainly the past couple of days that this will lead to an under 16 ban on social media. And for understandable reasons that are being discussed. But there was definitely a pullback at this week's cabinet meeting on Wednesday that went on longer than expected about, well, maybe this, the structures need to be put in place in Ireland and other member states, but that this should ultimately be resolved by the EU. This is, by the way, something that Michael McGrath, Ireland's EU Commissioner for, among other things, consumer protection, did point out a few days ago to RTE. He was saying, now he was careful in his words, but maybe it makes sense now, that he kept saying that there is a need for an EU platform in terms of doing this. So basically the EU works together on this rather than just member states.
And of course, and I know Minister O'Donovan, didn't he have some discussions with his French counterpart, because they're also looking at bringing in an age ban over there. But of course, in France, you have an ID system, a national ID system. So because we've a very, you know, there's all kinds of legal questions about that under our system, and there, it's still questionable how much government will be able to make our access to the internet something that you need a digital wallet for.
Yeah, and that's it. They have built the digital wallet. That is something that has been constructed. And the idea is that it will be separate to the information, will be separate to the social media platforms. So you will go in with your PPS number, for example, that verifies that you are over 16. We expect 16 to be the age, and that there will be a sort of a green light for, you know, the social media platforms that says this user is allowed to use it because they have proven they were that.
We during COVID to use our PPS numbers. That's how the government was
now,
able to
reach. Privacy campaigners have said, oh, this is very tricky. But if what is delivered is what's been described by Minister Patrick O'Donovan, that seems fairly reasonable. And he was at pains to say as well that the Irish system would be looking at age verification rather than allowing the social media companies to estimate people's users' age based on their answers to certain questions, because people can get around that. Of course, people will be able to get around it anyway. This is technology, and there are always people who are faster than governments and states. But there have been problems in Australia too. But it is important that efforts are made. Now, Paul Murphy was making, from People Before Profit, was making the point that, you know, while they're not against the age verification, it's the algorithms. And a lot of people have been screaming about it. It's the algorithms, and that's what needs to be tackled before this.
Yes, and that it's easier, if you like, to try and put limits around children and what children can do. instead of taking on the tech companies and the algorithms that they are running on those tech companies to see. And of course, Mark Zuckerberg, isn't he facing a trial in New York
There's quite a high profile trial at the moment going on in the States at the moment on this wider issue. I think it comes down to infinite scrolling and whether these social media platforms are designed, or as people like Mark Zuckerberg would say, surely not, to lead to perhaps an addictive nature. Now, of course, those social media firms, they insist that that's not the case. Open question at this stage.
You would say different.
And coming back home, what we have to look forward to in the medium term is a pilot scheme in this area. Is that right?
We do have a pilot scheme in this area, and government sources on Wednesday were suggesting maybe that pilot scheme, more details are going to be announced next week. There's a little bit of vagueness on it, though. I think would be a fair description of how journalists responded to some of those government sources on the matter in terms of what exactly would that involve. And, you know, the big thing on this, the big thing that Juliet and yourself, Anya, were talking about just there, like, how are you going to do it? Like, because, you know, a ban is very easy to talk about, but implementing a ban, stopping teenagers from being able to get onto social media, I'm not entirely sure how that's going to work unless there's going to be buy-in from social media platforms. And I'm a little up in the air, I have to say, in terms of what that pilot is going to achieve at this stage.
And of course, Thornister pointing out on social media this week that we do have, you know, bans, for instance, in terms of, you know, drinking age and so on and so forth. It's just, again, digital rights and also accessibility and phones and all the rest. It's a lot more complicated than keeping a teenager away from going into a shop and buying drink or being able to buy a drink in a pub. One other story that's been making headlines this week, the North Kerry CAMS report, the latest version, and it's another devastating report. Once again, it's vulnerable children being let down by the people who are supposed to be looking after them. Once again, we have apologies from the HSE. We have calls for a more extended review. We have calls for a compensation scheme. We have promises of better, and the better governance is being put in place. However, we learned on Morning Ireland this morning that there's still no full-time psychiatrist for South Kerry CAMS. So this goes back, doesn't it, to the recruitment and capacity problem in health services in more remote parts of the country. And, you know, you look at it again, you look up at the problems they're having with cancer treatment in Letterkenny. And the people having to travel to Dublin to get their cancer treatment. It's rinse and repeat, isn't it?
It is. And I think even that absence of a psychiatrist was for the entire county of Kerry. And we've seen the reports into North and South Kerry. Children just prescribed huge amounts of medication for a very long time, very upset parents and very badly affected children. But again, you know, no one in government is saying that this wasn't a bad thing, but the solutions are thin on the ground when you can't staff the posts. And it's, again, it is, as you say, it's that intractable thing of, if you can't hire the people, how do you solve the problem? And people weren't getting their follow-ups. They were meeting with the doctors, but they weren't getting their follow-ups. They weren't getting the reviews. They weren't getting second opinions, and they weren't getting talking therapies. And it doesn't look like the situation has improved down there, apart from the acknowledgement that those things are required.
Yeah, and just before we came into the studio for this podcast, there was a fresh apology from the head of the HSE in relation to this. Now, the HSE has been apologising not just for the last couple of days, but since January 2022, when the first wider review of CAMS emerged. But just to highlight in very simple terms, two numbers just that are at the centre of all this, just how significant the difficulties there are. I think it's somewhere in the region of, out of, was it 370 cases examined in this review, some 207 or 210 had a problem. That's about 56%, give or take, of cases.
And basic health checks like blood pressure, weight gain, not being done. Now, we're told again that there's better governance now and better practice management, and these are in place, and that there are a number of people providing services now to try and give confidence to people who are bringing their children to appointments day after day. But still, it's, I mean, it's like scoliosis. It's rinse, repeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you would feel, I mean, obviously for the affected families, it's at the centre of all this. But I think it is important to also say you would also feel for the hardworking medics and, and everyone who are trying to address this and probably, you know, pushing back against an inevitability in some cases.
All right. Let's move up the coast now a bit to Limerick. What's been going on? Well, there's been a big row, Fiacra, hasn't there, between Mayor Moran, Mayor John Moran, and what he says is a subgroup of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil councillors who are not cooperating with his plan for Limerick.
Yeah, a big row in a subgroup. I think some other people have referred to it this week as the siege of Limerick and a cabal in some cases. So I was speaking just before we came in with our colleague Roisin Cullen, who's been reporting on this in the past few days. And I mean, it's high drama in Limerick. So John Moran, the first independent, the first directly elected mayor, and is also an independent, he wrote a blog this week, basically saying that, look, he has a legitimate health concern. He had to leave a vote, and then that vote was still pushed through. And he was pretty much directly blaming...
And this was after 5 hours.
It was after five hours, and I think it went on to for another two, so for 7 hours. So a lengthy meeting. You would think it would have been paused. And he was pointing the finger squarely at a small number of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil councillors in Limerick who seem to have some control and were directing what to do. But the wider part of this, the thing that really interests people in this, is he's suggesting and basically directly saying that, look, they're trying to undermine his position. So we've had a couple of Limerick TDs who've been speaking with Roisin Cullen, our colleague, about this. Willie O'Dea saying that, look, we need legislation to actually draw a line about who has the power, who doesn't, in what particular area. Niall Collins saying, can we all just get along? You know, we'll see about that. And Conor Sheehan from Labour, he's saying to maybe bring in a mediator on this. But in other words, there's no clear answer on this. It doesn't seem to be getting resolved any time soon. I'd expect more mud to be slung, not less, in the coming days.
Coming back to rents and housing, Fiacra, the Rental Tenancies Bill, almost in sight, it's becoming law?
Yeah, it seems to be the case. So as we're speaking right now, I think the vote is just happening in the Seanad. So that'll be the final conclusion of it in the Dáil and Seanad, and it will go up, will be whisked off now to Catherine Connolly on Uachtaráin, the president in Orson Uachtaráin, for sign-off. So it seems government will meet its March 1st deadline for that implementation. But that's not where the story ends, because there are still legitimate concerns, opposition say, overblown concerns, the coalition says, in terms of what this will mean in the short and medium term for renters. Now, everybody kind of accepts that, look, it's going to lead to an initial increase in the cost of renting, but it will eventually work out, says government. Opposition says this is going to cause lots of problems. One particular example that would be probably will be the most affected group immediately will be students. Students don't stay for a number of years in one tenancy by and large, and they could be facing significant increases in rents in the years to come.
So the government's bet here is that they'll ship some pain on this in the in the short term because of higher rents. Their hope is that over the medium term you get increased supply, which they're saying over time is the way that prices come down. Although with the median price of a house in Dublin now being 500,000, higher than at any point since the big boom days, isn't that right?
I think at least higher than any point since the boom days. Now, certainly on the rents, James Brown, the housing minister, that is his hope on it, and he has been very clear that he believes that will happen. In terms of the median house price, so it's €500,000 in Dublin. That's something that Pearse Doherty, the finance minister, Sinn Féin, was really needling the Taoiseach and Minister for Finance, Simon Harris, about in Thursday's leaders' questions, saying, you know, how high does a median house price have to go now in Ireland? Is it 600,000? Is it 700,000? Simon Harris saying, well, there's plenty of other properties that are also available under that rate. It's an ideological difference of opinion from both government and opposition on this.
Just speaking of the legislation going to President Connolly, 100 days in office.
Yeah, she's 100 days in office today, so on Thursday. Now, has she been quite as vocal maybe as her predecessor, Michael D. Higgins? Perhaps not so far. She has kind of made her impression felt in one particular speech she was due to give, where she was alluding to her views on foreign policy and other matters. She does have a couple of areas that are still on her to-do list, perhaps, and she's perhaps taken some time to consider them. One of them being the Council of State. There's mm-hmm. still no appointments to that. That's being watched very carefully by political anoraks. And secondly, we have a couple of big pieces of legislation. There won't be any news to listeners that they're still there. The triple lock, so the Defence Amendment Bill, and of course also the Occupied Territories Bill. Now, you would wonder what's going to happen to them. Catherine Connolly, the President, has limited powers in this. She can refer if she wants, if she feels it's unconstitutional. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Nobody quite knows on it. But with the EU presidency coming up for Ireland in the second half mm-hmm. of this year, you would wonder, is the window becoming more apparent or tightening for those two pieces of legislation?
Yes. And all we could get out of Minister Niall Collins on Sunday, Juliet, was in terms of when we're going to see the triple lock legislation, which the government has been talking about for quite a while. And the minister was certainly advocating shortly.
Yeah, again, we're really not getting clarity. How long is the pause for? Not quite clear. When are we getting it again? And then in terms of the Occupied Territories Bill, well, that's also been put on the long finger for sure.
No, it's being taken very seriously and they're getting advice. It needs lots of advice.
Lots of consideration.
Yes. Michael Collins has been getting exercised about school meals.
Oh, gosh, the school meals thing is a very tricky one. You'll have some people saying that they are an absolute necessity and that, yes, of course, people who would otherwise not be well fed are getting fed and they're getting a hot school meal. And then you'll have people like Michael Collins talking about, you know, beef and noodles and being stomach churningly bad looking. Mm-hmm. It's a very broad argument. I think that some suppliers are doing an excellent job. Some teachers and parents I've spoken to are very, very happy with it. They have, you know, compostable, recyclable packaging, healthy options. And then others who are saying, really, their children turn their nose up at it.
So Minister Cleary, there's a dietitian doing a review of these meals in schools.
Again, this seems to be a slightly overdue review. However, he very convincingly spoke about the changes that he's brought in. And it does seem that they've now reduced or completely banned the sort of cheat day meals which they had. But then the difficulty is as well is that some kids only want to eat beige food. And so if they're giving them nothing but peas and quinoa, that's not going to go down well either. Now, I don't think they're going that far. But look at the review is important. And I think as well that some suppliers were perhaps not adhering to the guidelines that they were given.
Before we go, just the one thing I think Catherine Connolly did in her first 100 days that was just jaw-droppingly impressive was that, not just the keepy uppies, but that backwards basketball flip that she did was up in Belfast, wasn't it? Or in a school in the north.
It was, yeah. You kind of wonder, did she miss a trick on this and should she become an NBA star? Maybe Chicago Bulls back in the 90s and early 2000s. But Catherine Connolly, I think... some people maybe wonder during the campaign, what's her PR like? I think her PR and her PR skills are just as good as her basketball skills. She knows how to get an easy layup, I think is the phrase in basketball terms, rather than a slam dunk.
See, there you go. All the terms. Thank you, Fiacre. Thank you, Juliet. And we'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.